I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. On this episode, I have a fantastic guest, Dr. Sharon Spano. She's appearing on the show just to give you a sense of who she is and why I had such an amazing time chatting with her. She's got a PhD in human and organizational systems. So already, you know you're going to get into some systemization. She's got a new book out called The Pursuit of Time and Money, Step into Radical Abundance and Discover the Secret to a Meaningful, Prosperous Life. She's really dove deep into, you know, why we have certain beliefs about time and money. We're going to talk about that inside of this episode. And, you know, I mean, she coaches people, she helps people adopt, you know, new paradigms around and about time and money so that, you know, they can step into that abundance in every area of their lives. So I love that because, you know, when I talk about time crafting, it's and productivity, I talk about personal productivity. I believe that there's that you can't just be productive at work. It's got to be in all aspects of your life. So we dive into a lot of things, you know, why beliefs are held around time and money as such, you know, what she offers to people when they are going through, you know, this process of figuring out, you know, why they value time and money as they do. And just a whole cornucopia of really great stuff in this episode. So let's just get right into it. Here is my conversation with Dr. Sharon Spano here on the Productivityist Podcast. Enjoy. The doctor is in. See, I wanted to say that. Sharon, thanks for joining me today on the Productivityist Podcast.
Thanks so much, Mike, for having me. I'm very excited to be here today.
So we've had a great time chatting before we started recording. And unfortunately, we didn't record that, which is good because there was a lot of cool stuff we talked about that we wouldn't want to share generally anyway. I think it's some good inside baseball stuff. But if you're a member of the Productivityist community, stick around and I'll talk to you about some of the bonus material that we are recording that you can get privy to as a member. But I want to talk to Sharon today about her book, The Pursuit of Time and Money, Step into Radical Abundance and Discover the Secret to a Meaningful, Prosperous Life. Now, I want to talk initially, Sharon, about why this topic, why this subject is so important to you, because when I hear the words time and money together, I mean, people have heard me talk about those resources. Why is this such a passionate area for you?
Well, it's a great question. And first, let me say that even though the book is about time and money, it's not addressing it in the typical sense, in that I'm not looking at how to manage time and money. I leave that up to the great minds like yourself, because my belief from the many years of working with multiple clients, and there was one specific incident that I'll share that I think usually drives it home to people, is that everyone in business, you know, no matter if they're an executive leader all the way down to even, you know, the small business owner, I think we're all feeling the pressure in ways we haven't seen before with respect to time and money. In that, you know, we're being asked to do a lot very quickly, respond to things, you know, almost instantaneously, and things of that nature. So I see the two as very, very closely linked. My early research indicates that. So the passion behind it really came from a point of curiosity. And the story that I love to share, as I think any business owner could attest to, was I had a man that worked for me some years ago, and he was a former COO, actually had been a CEO at one point in his career, very, very smart man. And I brought him into my business to help me break into some new markets. And I spent a lot of time, money, energy investing in his talent. And it came to pass that, I mean, I never really could get him to create results. And I'm actually embarrassed to say that I spent 3 years trying to do so because I just, you know, he served other purposes, but I couldn't get him to bring in the new business. And then one day we were at a conference in California. And I just felt, here we are again, and he doesn't seem to be getting any of this. And I just asked a simple question. And the question was, you know, what do you believe about people who have money? And his response shocked me in that without hesitation, he said, I think they're egocentric, oppressive, and greedy. And in that moment, Mike, it was like the light bulb went on, because I remember thinking to myself, and I may have even said it out loud, I can't remember, but I remember thinking, well, no wonder I can't get you to make any money. If you believe that, you know, why would you want to be like one of those guys? And so, obviously, you know, I terminated that relationship sometime later. And then I just began to see that, you know, we all have, and I'm seeing more of it now that the book is out, where people are coming up to me and saying, oh my gosh, you know, I never realized that I have these narratives around time and money. And part of the book and what we explore is that much of this, as any part of our development, as you well know, comes from our early childhood experiences and the stories that we're told and don't even realize, you know, start to form our belief systems and our assumptions. And so just even this morning, I was working with a client and we kind of went down that path a little bit. And I'm finding it really fascinating because a lot of people who come from the post-war generation, if they're successful at all, what I'm hearing from them is part of the narrative that they were told and bought into was it's hard work at all costs. And there's a guilt thing, a scarcity guilt that will show up when you've come from those environments where, as the gentleman said this morning, I mean, I just can't hardly rest on the weekends because my parents never did. And we were taught that you work hard all the time and leisure is not an option. So that leads to burnout and a whole lot of other things. So I'll leave it with there. I mean, you can see that I'm very passionate about breaking through some of these paradigms and really opening up a conversation so that people then can explore where they stand on the spectrum between scarcity and abundance. And that positions them to access the work that you do, I believe, in more robust ways.
You know, one of the things that I loved about reading the book was the idea of reflective practice. And I think that this is a nice tie into what you were just talking about, because people are coming up to you and they're saying, you know, I never realized the narrative that was there. I mean, one of the things you say in the book, which, you know, and this is right out of the gate, right in the introduction, is you talk about the idea that, you know, how people view time and money is kind of, they're like windows into the essence of who you are, right? You know, and that's kind of what you notice with that client. But with the idea of, I talk about journaling a lot, and I believe that that kind of practice cultivates awareness and lets you dig deep. And one of the things that you do in this book is you really ask people to look deep. Can you discuss, you know, the benefits of this reflective practice? And when you, and I don't want to give away too much in the book, but there's some questions that you would not expect to show up in a book of this, that when you're looking at the cover of this book, you're going, I did not expect to read a question about that.
Yeah, that's an awesome question, Mike, because my work is grounded in human development and consciousness, adult human development. And so kind of the without getting too deep into that, and part of what I think was fun about the book was I was able to take some very complex knowledge and information and pare it down into, you know, what most are saying is very user-friendly information. So when we think about human development, what we know are there are what we call 12 stages of development. And within those stages are 26 lines of development. So I'm focusing on the six primary ones in the book. And what we know is that in the United States, from the research that's out there, there's roughly 60% of the workforce falls in what we call, or many theorists call, the expert or achiever stage. And they don't go beyond that mostly because, you know, we are, you know, we value being achievers and all that involves. And so each stage has its own way of viewing the world. None of the stages are wrong. I mean, they can be, of course, if you're bringing in a lot of, you know, baggage or you have some psychological issues that are holding you in what, you know, psychologists refer to as, like, you know, creating what they call shadow crashes or things of that nature. But each has the potential to be very healthy and robust in and of itself. But the way that you move to a later stage of development is through a shift of consciousness. And the simplest way to think of consciousness that it has to do with how we make meaning of our world. And each stage does that differently. So the analogy that I like to use is if you can imagine a mountain, and if there were 12 base camps on the mountain, base camp number one is not a bad place to be, but you can't see as much from there as you can from, you know, the summit. and you can't helicopter to the summit. You have to do the work and grow up and wake up into higher stages of consciousness. And obviously, as you do, you have broader, more meaningful perspectives and worldviews about life. So what the reflective practices are intended to do is to open up awareness about my own internal psychology, if you will, and consciousness, such that I can examine what's working for me, what isn't working for me, and where I might need to make changes in my life.
You know, one of the things that I'm a big that drives me and almost, you know, repels me is the idea of fear. You know, I mean, I'm a big Green Lantern fan. Who's the enemy of fear? I've got so much willpower stuff around my office that kind of just staves off fear. One of the things that you dive into, especially as we get, you know, into the idea of time and money as a window into the soul, is that fear is one of those things that gets produced when we feel like when we're broken or fragile, we make decisions about our time or money in fear. One of the other things you touch on is the idea that people, they need to spend some time on their moral choice, like on morals, right? Rather than obligations. Can you kind of maybe expand upon the idea of like how many people think that they have enough time to choose to spend time on their moral choices and not other obligations? Because I think, and your research would probably either would shed more light on this, is I think more people spend time on, you know, the stuff in front of them. And we talked a little bit about this when you were talking about awareness, than the stuff that is, you know, really embedded into their values and into their principles.
Well, it's all subject to interpretation. So the best way I can maybe explain that is an example of just someone I'm working with this morning where he's having trouble scaling his business because there's perfectionism going on there. There's a notion that I have to do everything myself. And so therefore he can't even delegate or think to hire and he doesn't even have the time to do the marketing and outreach to scale the business. So when we get to the root of that and the narrative, you know, has to do with a lot of things, but one of it was, you know, I finally got to the question, you know, what is driving this? Well, fear. Well, what are you afraid of? Well, what if I fail? Well, what's the worst thing that can happen if you fail? Well, I might let down a lot of people that work for me. I might, my family won't eat. I might lose the business, you know, all these stories. So he's working harder, 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 faster, 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 literally 7 days a week, and totally unable to see that he's sabotaging his own potential for any level of success or prosperity or abundance or happiness or joy or any of those things. So we have to go back in, again, get to the root of it. He's making very moral choices, but they're not the right choices. So when we look at the assessment that I developed some years ago, the time money inventory shows us where people fall on the spectrum between scarcity and abundance. And what I always like to say is when we began to look at the early data, scarcity was fairly obvious. I mean, these were people who just, you know, felt they didn't have enough of time or money and never would. Abundance was fairly obvious on the other end of the spectrum where people felt they could create whatever they needed. What was most revealing was the moderate ranges of moderate scarcity, moderate abundance. And the big distinction that showed up for me was, it shows up as people that are highly responsible that think on one level they're coming from an abundant perspective because they're doing all the right things. They're working hard. They're saving money for their kids' college, their retirement, or whatever. But they're actually making fear-based decisions and they're living in a place of, you know, I don't have enough. And so it's really moderate scarcity. Just they have a certain modicum of success and results. So they're not as desperate to examine maybe even what's going on in their life. They just know they're drowning and they don't know how to get out.
You know, it's funny, as you talked about the idea of fear-based decisions, John Acuff was on the show when he put out his book, Finish, and he talked about the idea of making choices based on setting goals based on fear versus reward. Have you looked into the idea of, okay, one of the ways to kind of get past this scarcity and fear-based choices, and we're going to get into the scarcity of time here in a minute too, because that whole chapter six is absolutely I mean, I loved it, especially when you put it, when you combine it with what you've gotten in the appendix and all that stuff. But do you, is going, trying to rewire the brain, especially if you are, you know, kind of predisposed to use fear as a motivator to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to look at the reward side of things. Have you looked into that? And if so, how has that been, what's your research or what's your findings surrounding that when it comes to this kind of stuff?
I haven't looked at it in a tangible way, but I think it's a point worthy of consideration because I know in my integral coaching work, for instance, it always rises up in more of an organic way. So we may be talking about, you know, what's holding you back? You know, what is the fear-based conversation that you're in that's driving your behaviors? But then we always, because in integral coaching, for instance, one of the ways that we shift consciousness is we use metaphor. So we're looking at your current way of being with the metaphor, and we're not saying it's wrong or that you're going to throw that out, because obviously most of our clients have, a modicum of success that, you know, that they enjoy. We don't want to lose that. But then we shift to what would your new way of being look like by way of metaphor, and what are the rewards of that? So we're always talking about your ways of being and what they allow for and what they close down. So the closing down would be kind of the fear-based stuff that's resulting in my losing whatever it is or not gaining whatever it is that I want. But then the opening up or the growing up or the waking up into a new way of being really focuses on here's the reward. And that's part of that shift in consciousness. So with the gentleman that I was mentioning earlier, for instance, once we unravel, it was kind of like almost silly. Like he was like, wow, I can't believe that I've been holding all this long. Well, then what would it look like in your new way of being? And then that's when you start to see, here's the reward, and this is what I'm longing for. And one of the things that I find interesting, again, it's more organic for me in the process, but people often, and I know you probably see this as well, they're so busy on the treadmill of life, they very often don't even know what they want. With this guy, I literally said, I want you to, and I've done this a lot, like I want you to design your ideal weekend day off. Like you're going to have a leisure day. And if time and money were not the issue at all, what would it look like? And he was like, what do you mean? Like what time would you wake up? Who would you spend your day with, if anybody, and what would you be doing? And you would have thought I'd asked him to build a rocket ship to the moon, because it was so foreign for him that he had a choice.
Yeah. And what's interesting too is when I work with people, when I talk to people at Time Crafting, is I'll have them theme a day, which is very similar to what you're talking about. And I think what's happening and what I've seen, and maybe we could touch on this a little bit, is that no one drills down to that specific, like one thing, like one day. They try to do it on the whole. So instead of, it's like, so, you know, when they're trying to, you know, achieve or pursue, which, by the way, I mean, I love the idea of pursuit, you know, the idea that it's a constant, like it's a quest, like it's something that you may, you know, it could end, but you're in pursuance of it, like you're pursuing it. But, whenever I work with people, whenever I talk to people about it, they're like, you're right. You mean I can do that? But secondly, like, oh, I've never thought about it in that minute of a way. I've always thought about it in the spectrum of I can't possibly do that for everything. And you're like, no, I'm not asking you to do it for everything. I'm just asking you to do it for one day, or, you know, maybe one weekend. And you kind of build it out from there, right?
Exactly. And I remember years ago when I tried to do it for myself as a young mother, I literally could not even figure out what time I would get up, because I was so programmed I have to be up at 5 in order to get everything rolling before I get my family up, that the idea of me having a Saturday where I could choose when I woke was like, I couldn't even comprehend it. And I had to really, and so I really appreciate when my clients struggle with that, because I have to just say, I'm not saying that you're going to neglect anyone or do anything horrific. Just pretend that you have the choice. And then what's interesting is they begin to see, well, I really do have a choice. Like I really can tell my wife and kids that I'm going to sleep till 7 and maybe, you know, go for a run before I take them to breakfast, you know? So it goes back again to that responsibility that sometimes can strangle us when we don't even realize that the people around us love us and would probably honor what we need to do to maintain our health more than we realize half the time.
You know, as we're recording this, yesterday I went to book club for the first time in months. And in my head, and we all, I mean, that's the thing. We often, I mean, let's be clear. Sharon and I had the conversations we had earlier. Like there's, we need work too. It's not just like, there was that saying, we teach what we need to learn the most in some cases, you know what I mean? But, you know, my wife was like, I said, you know, I'm working on my book. I'm working on some stuff. I said, you know, I really, shouldn't go to book club. And she goes, if you don't want to go, that's fine. But if you're going because of that, then that's the wrong, that's not a wise move because you need this, like you need to have that. And I went and it was 2 hours and it felt like it lasted a lot longer, but in a good way. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, there was some great company and I hadn't seen, and it led to, I'm having coffee with one of the guys next week and dinner with another one 2 weeks from now. And so I think that this leads to that idea of scarcity of time because one of my favorite quotes is by Lao Tzu, you know, saying I don't have, my time is a man-made thing. Saying I don't have is like saying I don't want to. And that's, so many of us get stuck in that trap of there's not enough time, there's not enough time. And you, in this chapter, like you really, you know, you talk about the scarcity perspectives, which you talk about the idea of, you know, being constantly busy. Why are we... are we almost pursuing the ability to make time more scarce at this point? Like, are we almost trying to validate that? Because, you know, it's not, first off, A, it's not true. Like you said, we have choice. And secondly, it almost, by doing that, and it creates this sense of you're getting a lot done because there isn't much time, which again is kind of a falsehood if you're getting the wrong things done, right?
I agree. And I think we are, Mike. I think we've just become, and we've been here a long time where it's almost, kind of a status thing. You know, if you can say how busy you are and how many, you know, like I travel a lot for my work. And so, you know, people always come up to me like it's a big deal. Like, oh, I had someone the other day go, oh my gosh, you're everywhere. Everywhere I look, you're somewhere else.
And I'm thinking, how do you get anything done? Like, how do you, I just do it somewhere different.
Well, but the thing that's funny is, you know, I'm not traveling near the way that I used to by choice. And yet people perceive that about me and hold me in that history, but they act like it's such a badge of honor because I'm busy. And I have to watch myself that I don't fall into that persona and kind of, you know, go there myself. Because I think we all tend to do that. You know, there's just this constant, you know, social media and just the whole technology world that we live in is such a blessing in so many ways. But then, you know, there's the vanity numbers and all the stuff.
Yeah, it creates optics. Like there are people who, I mean, again, book club last night, I haven't traveled nearly as much recently, but it was like, wow, you're all over the place lately. I'm like, not really. But again, it's what they see. It's what they've seen. And again, this kind of leads back to something. It colors their thoughts. It colors their perspective, right?
Well, and I think the other thing that adds to our social consciousness too is this idea of comparison. Like, you know, when you're on the social media, it looks like everybody else has the perfect life and you're the only one chasing time and money because they're all posting pictures all day long. But you know, it is all, I love that language, optics. And so for me, it's about getting to the narrative. You know, where did it start? One of the things that I always ask my audience to do is just quickly write down, what do you believe about money and what do you believe about time? And it's really interesting, particularly in marriages, how they can be completely different in their belief systems and not even understand that it is those paradigms that are tripping them up within their own family. And they're bringing in their family systems, the junk. You know, I grew up in a house where, you know, my mother's favorite language was, well, it must be nice for those rich people. We can't do that. You know, so when in my early marriage, you know, as we got successful and had homes and, you know, started traveling, I had a lot of guilt about that. you know, because my mother didn't have those opportunities. And she would remind me if we moved and got a newer house or a bigger house or whatever, or went on a trip, you know, she would remind me that she never had those options. So we have underlying hidden dynamics that exist in every family system. And so again, well, I'm just trying to open the conversation up for us to explore them and not blame or hold on to them, but acknowledge them so that we can let them go and then, you know, examine what needs to happen for me to move into more abundant perspectives. Because one of the things that I talk about in the book, as you know, is the cycle of freedom. And, mm-hmm. and the secret to me has to do with stewardship and how we value what we have and how we access and use it. So time and money to me are really a tool. And that's really what the whole chapter about window into the soul is. And I think you asked me a question earlier about that in terms of they really tell us, you know, what it is that I value. Am I going to invest my time and money in the people I love and care about, you know? And, you know, I always jokingly, you know, talk about, you know, when I married my husband, who's all about abundance, I had a lot of scarcity in those early days of my life that came from my family, as I've alluded to a moment ago. But he breaks me through that when I fall into that trap of you know, comparison or thinking that, you know, I need to honor those family dynamics, or I feel guilty because I have more than my sister or whatever junk might come for me. He'll help me break through that. And it's nice to have someone in your arena who comes from an abundant perspective that can be an interruption to those kinds of conversations. Because I think the other thing that's important that I want to stress is I don't believe any of us are on one end of the spectrum or the other all of the time.
Well, I want to definitely dive into, you know, the new perspective on time and the pursuit, you know, the time and money cycle of freedom and all that stuff. But we're not going to be able to do that in this episode. It's going to be for bonus material. So I want to ask one last question before we wrap up, though. And I think that this is something I've been focusing a lot more on in recent months, weeks, you know, is the idea of the role of integrity in all of this. Because I think that, you know, that to me, you know, I think it plays a role when you're dealing with, you know, the idea of trying to get to a level of abundance and trying to stave off things like fear and scarcity. Where, you know, and again, I'm kind of throwing you a bit of a curveball here, but where does integrity come into play here? Because I think it's something that when people can tap into it, then they can say, okay, this is what this means. This is how I'm going to operate going forward, so that I can, like you said, there's no right or wrong. You know, when it comes to the end of the spectrum, we tend to float. But how do I, you know, how can I make it so that I float more towards the positive than the negative?
I think that's a very intriguing question, and it's something I would really want to explore deeper. But I think, you know, off the top of my head, what I would say. You know, integrity is a word that's interpreted by many people in many different ways. And certainly if you're at an earlier stage of development, it's going to mean something very different from someone at a later stage of development. To me, it's grounded in being very intentional and having awareness of my passion, my purpose in life. And there's a level of contentment that surrounds this whole idea of radical abundance from my perspective. And that to me is also grounded in some level of authenticity. And it's interesting, I was in New York doing a Facebook Live show 2 weeks ago, and the young woman who was hosting it said, well, you know, how do you get your values? Like, where do you find them? And I thought, wow, you know, we've got to do a better job here to help the millennials create space to explore those things. You know, with life being as fast and complex as it is today, if you don't have that sense of what it is you believe in and what your values are, I don't know that you have a way to measure if you're in integrity or not.
Right.
We can't just go by how we feel, because our feelings can be misleading. So really a great question, and something I think you're onto something by asking it and exploring it deeper.
Maybe we can dive into that in a future episode as well. Dr. Sharon Spano, thanks for joining me this week on the podcast. Where can people find more about your work, and where can they get this book, The Pursuit of Time and Money, Step into Radical Abundance and Discover the Secret to a Meaningful, Prosperous Life?
Well, obviously it's on Amazon. It's a bestseller on Amazon. You can get it at any of the major bookstores or my website, SharonSpano.com. And then we have many other resources available on the landing page, the timemoneybook.com as well.
Awesome. Thanks again for joining me today. I had a great time.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike.
So there you have it. I really enjoyed my time with Sharon. We talked outside of the episode for another good half hour or so. This book, my wife doesn't generally, like I was saying in the episode, my wife generally doesn't read a lot of these books, but she dove in. I mean, she dog-eared this thing. It wasn't, and this is something that I'm going to keep on my shelf and refer to regularly, because when I'm working with people we're talking about the things that I talk about with them. I mean, figuring out why they have this relationship, and being able to look back at Dr. Spano's work and say, look, here's maybe something you might want to look at, is going to be really valuable. So thanks to Dr. Spano for joining me on the show. Of course, you can find all of the relevant links that we talked about in the show notes. And if you are a member of Productivityist, then you're going to be able to actually dive in deeper, because I have a bonus episode with her and some additional content. Head over to productivityist.com/membership to learn more about that. And, that's about it. I mean, thanks to John Polster for producing this week's episode and all episodes before this one. Thanks to my assistant, Claire, for putting together the show notes from what I kind of wrote out and getting them to where they need to be. And thanks to you for listening. Until next time, this is Mike Bardi of the Productivityist Podcast, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.